Hello and welcome to Burst's Purple Day celebrations, National Purple Day, where we celebrate everything that's purple, but more importantly, we also discuss epilepsy. That's right, National Purple Day is about epilepsy and getting information out there about epilepsy. Here on Burst, we thought it was very important to talk to somebody who suffered from epilepsy, and I happen to know one person. His name is Ben. He currently lives in Moscow, but he's originally from Northern Ireland. Just to give you some background to this, Ben and I went to university together in Glasgow. One day, I got a text message from some friends saying that Ben had collapsed. And naturally, it kind of spooked me because, you know, it's not often that you hear that a friend of yours has collapsed and is shaking around on the floor. So we were all very worried. When we found out he had epilepsy, you can imagine that it changed a couple of things for him. But I think it's better if I let Ben talk about that. So here's Ben talking about his life with epilepsy, how he learned about it, what it's like, some of the issues that he's faced dealing with living with epilepsy, and how it, realistically, it hasn't changed his life that much. In fact, it's woken him up to some of the silly things he was doing as a kid, and that he's perfectly capable of living a happy life with epilepsy. Just one note to make sure that you understand, he is not a doctor by any means. He just happens to live with epilepsy and should not be seen as having any medical background beyond his own personal experience. Now, I'll chip in every now and then to give you some information about epilepsy as we go along. Yeah, this was recorded on Skype, so if there's any weird sound issues, that's down to Skype because he's in Moscow at the moment. And of course, we're in the UK. So anyway, I hope you enjoy. This is my friend Ben talking about epilepsy.
So when I found out I was an epilepsy sufferer officially in about, say about 13 years ago, roughly about that time, it was 2004, I think, was when I was diagnosed as living with a particular type of epilepsy. I actually had not had a diagnosis beforehand, but I had two or three episodes prior to that. The first one can be traced back to when I was in secondary school. I was, I went to that type of school where you could do rowing. We had a boat club. So I was training in one of the squads, and I ended up going to someone's birthday party the night before. And really, I should not have driven to Saturday morning practice at all. It was a freezing cold February or January morning. I was still drunk, probably. I should not have been driving either. But for some reason, I got it into my head that I needed to get to rowing practice. I was very tired, very little sleep, and still drunk as well at some point, but eventually sobered up. I didn't have anything to eat for breakfast. And of course, the rest of the squad was late coming to practice, so I was spending most of the time sitting in a mostly cold boathouse trying to stay warm. Eventually, when we did go out onto the river, after about 20 minutes of rowing, and when we turned up to come back up, we'd done like about a kilometer of the thing, I passed out. I was in a four, which means I was in a boat with three other people rowing and a coxswain. And I passed out, and apparently it was mildly humorous because I was slumped over in my seat, but I had slumped over and my hand was like coming back and forth, and I was bashing myself in the head, making this, according to the onlookers, making this kind of like, noise, this kind of low moaning, like boom, boom. And then they realized something was up because I wasn't, responding. Next thing I remember is coming to on a nearby wooden jetty in Belfast, with a oxygen mask over my face, and somewhat confused. And apparently before that, the paramedic was not amused at my behavior, but apparently I was somewhat lucid and kept on trying to get the mask off my face or the blanket away from me. And apparently the paramedic said something to the effect of, "Will someone get a brick and knock this person out so I can do my job?" When it first happened to me, this is the one thing I won't forget about it. The first time it happened, when the paramedic came in, well, not the first time when it happened, but the first time it was an actual seizure when I was taken to a hospital. Paramedic came into the room and he asked me, "Benjamin," say, "what?" because I'm sort of dazed. I'm standing up, and I'm like, there's no problem. There's no problem here. He asked me, he's like, Ben, do you know what day is today? And the question struck me. It was like very profound. He asked me, what day is it? And the part of the question that didn't get me was, like, I didn't know what day it was. I didn't understand, at that moment, I didn't understand what the concept of a day even was. So I literally did not understand his question, if that makes any sense. It was such a strange thing. Like, I couldn't answer his question because I couldn't, for some reason in my head, process what he was saying. Like, I remember what he said, like, Ben, do you know what day it is? And I was like, and I think I said something like was completely off. I went, Thursday? And it was Saturday evening or something like that. I was taken to hospital, obviously, you know, school learned about it immediately. And the doctor gave me a note saying, you probably should go see a neurologist. Like, you know, everything checks out, but, you know, you might have something here. So you should go see a neurologist. I didn't go see a neurologist. And a year or two later, I ended up having I had an episode in between that time, but I had another major episode in first year at university. As to the causes of epilepsy, the misconception is some people have, as was mentioned in this podcast, they think it's a strobe light. And yes, that is it's a type of epilepsy. It's one of the causes of it is photosensitivity. It is when you have a certain sequence of lights at a certain frequency or intensity, it causes you to have a seizure. A seizure can be one of three types, and they can vary in intensity. The first type of seizure you can have is something called a petit mal, or an absence seizure is its name, but they have a kind of petit mal is the more kind of generic name that people might know. Petit mal seizures are seen for reasons I don't know, but it's usually cited that it affects young girls, preteens, those like girls from about the age of 5 upwards. They sometimes might suffer from absence seizures. As the name indicates, absence seizures are when you are like kind of daydreaming. You don't respond to stimuli, but you're not shaking. And you know, you might be walking somewhere and then you'll just stop. And which might not seem that problematic, but like, you know, if you're crossing the street and you suddenly stop, that might be a problem. The second type of seizure is called myoclonic seizures. Myoclonic seizures, you start to have twitches in your limbs, which is, you know, your arms and your legs. So you have kind of periodic, you have spasms, yeah. Like if you imagine, perhaps it's not the right kind of thing, but imagine like the same kind of thing you have if, you know, if someone's testing the reflex of your knee and they hit the thing under your knee and your knee moves of its own accord. Your leg moves of its own accord. Your arms kind of do the same thing. You don't have any control over what they're doing. It's infrequent and it comes on in waves and shudders. And that one is the most unpleasant. Because you're fully cognizant of it, but you have no control over it. And the third type is the tonic-clonic seizure, or the phase. The tonic-clonic is the one that people probably think of when you say the word epileptic or epilepsy. That is when you are on the ground, your face is turning blue, and you're spasming. You know, your back's arching up, and you might be doing all sorts of things. I've never actually seen myself doing this for obvious reasons, because I was the one doing it, not, you know, witnessing it. I have heard accounts from a few people. It is very distressing for other people to see, and it's very easy for other people to overreact. But I mean, how can you not overreact when the person you're seeing is, you know, on the floor, arching their back, maybe, you know, shaking somewhat violently, and their face is turning blue? What happens during a tonic-clonic seizure is it's not uncommon for the person to stop breathing because I don't know the exact terms of this, but there is actually plenty of literature about this, but this is not life-threatening. But we'll get to maybe that point in the thing. In my case, I have only ever gotten the myoclonic seizures and the tonic-clonic seizures. The tonic-clonic ones are what you would call the major ones. the myoclonic ones are sort of like the minor kind of symptoms at times. So, you know, I've never had a tonic-clonic seizure without having a myoclonic one beforehand. So the myoclonic seizures, you know, it's kind of like, actually, it's very similar to having delirium tremens, which will sort of give away the next point, is that while photosensitivity can be one of the triggers of an epileptic episode, the other ones are plain old kind of like, you know, fatigue, which can be brought on by various forms of overstimulation, understimulation perhaps, main ones being alcohol, lack of sleep, and exhaustion. And if you combine all those three, you have a good chance you have a good chance of feeling terrible regardless. But if you are predisposed to having, if you or your family, member of your family has a history of epilepsy, then you drastically increase your chances of having an episode yourself. When you read some of the pamphlets and some of the literature about in the various hospital waiting rooms, some statistic that was often repeated is like, you know, something like 1 in every 10 people has had some form of a seizure in their life. And there are a lot more people who live with epilepsy than you would actually think. I don't actually know any personally myself, but it's not really something you tend to share with people.
Epilepsy can affect anyone at any age from any walk of life, and in the UK, 600,000 or 1 in every 103 people has epilepsy. Every day in the UK, 87 people are diagnosed with epilepsy, and only 52% of those people with epilepsy in the UK are seizure-free. It is estimated that roughly 70% could be seizure-free with the right treatment.
So, like, a full-on seizure will put you out of action pretty much for the rest of the day. Like, you can't think anymore. But the actual thing itself is very unpleasant to watch, and it's very, very debilitating. It's also actually, for some people, I'm over it myself, but it's very humiliating too. Like, to come to feel very confused, you know, to feel violently sick and other things, and, you know, to see people around you staring at you as if you've, you know, literally as if you've come back from the dead, because to all intents and purposes, you may have looked as though you just did that. My friend Sarah was one of the few people to witness this happening, and she said to me, "You looked as though you were dying." I mean, you don't need to go to hospital. Like, if someone's known to be an epilepsy sufferer, you don't need to go to hospital. You just, you know, you need to give them time to eventually become mobile, or, you know, clean themselves up after they throw up, and, you know, kind of comfort them to make it seem as though they're not, you know, like a complete monster.
Many people with epilepsy are still discriminated against due to ignorance about the condition. And epilepsy is covered by the Equality Act in England, Scotland and Wales, and the Disability Discrimination Act in Northern Ireland.
My kind of takeaway from it, and when I had it, when I was diagnosed, when I went to the Doctor of Neurology at Glasgow's Western Medical, I distinctly remember the doctor's words, and she said, "You have a classic case." And it was delivered with such kind of, you know, not ferocity, it's not the word I'm looking for. She said it with such bluntness that I was, like, severely taken aback. On one hand, it was sort of a relief. Okay, this thing has a name. I that means it's, you know, kind of treatable now. But at the same time, it was like, you know, you have that thing like, okay, I have something wrong with me now. And this particular thing is permanent. Like, this is, once you're, you know, you have epilepsy, it's, in quite a few cases, sometimes it affects you for a certain period of life. Like, this is called juvenile myoclonic epilepsy, or JME for short.
As Ben mentioned, many people who develop epilepsy below the age of 20 will grow out of it in adult life.
It's not to be confused with photosensitive epilepsy, which is brought on by flashing lights. So they said to me, okay, we can treat you, or you can also take part in a program. And what that meant was like, okay, we want to research you, which basically means we're going to take blood from you about every month. We're going to get you to do a questionnaire. We want to, you know, track your, you know, kind of your, how you are coming along with these drugs. You'll be chosen at random, but you basically are going into kind of like, not trials, these are actually drugs, but we want to put you into kind of like, you know, a sample. So they set me up with their epilepsy units, and I would go see, I think her name was Pamela, a very nice lady who would take several vials of blood every few weeks and would make me do what would be considered kind of silly psychological tests, which were things like, okay, you're sitting in a chair, and she'll ask you basic commands like, okay, point to the table, point to the ceiling, point to the floor, and touch your nose. Like, you know, it feels kind of silly doing it, and you sort of laugh, but these were the things like, okay, like, you know, we have to make sure that, you know, his brain is not being somehow ruined by some of these medications that he's taking.
Many people with epilepsy can take part in the same activities as everyone else with the help of simple safety measures where appropriate. And people who have been seizure-free for a year can reapply for their driving license.
Well, that's right, actually. In light of my diagnosis, it's British law compelled me to surrender my license. And there was actually, I remember, there was an incident where I was having myoclonic seizures while I was trying to drive my friends home after a party somewhere. I was kind of twitching, and yeah, I could have driven my friends off the road and killed us all. The nurse on our final session before, like after, you know, getting tests done for 2-3 years, she said, I have to tell you something before you go. I'm like, what's that? I have to tell you something about SUD. And SUD, what is SUD? And it stands for sudden unexpected death.
So he's talking about SUDs, or more particularly SUDEP, which is sudden unexplained death in epilepsy. So if a person with epilepsy dies suddenly, as Ben explained, and unexpectedly, with no obvious cause of death, it can be called sudden unexplained or unexpected death in epilepsy. Now, the causes of SUDEP have been shown to be connected with seizures. The exact cause is not known at the moment, and there may be several, and there may be no single explanation. However, it is thought that seizure activity in the brain may sometimes cause changes in person's heartbeats or breathing. This could cause the person to stop breathing or their heart to stop beating. It is estimated that SUDEP happens to 1 in every 1,000 people with epilepsy. There is no way of predicting this. However, some people with epilepsy have a higher risk of SUDEP than others. The single most important risk factor is uncontrolled generalized tonic-clonic seizures. This is a type of seizure, as Ben explained, where that person tends to lose consciousness. Their body goes stiff and then starts jerking. SUDEP has occurred in people who had seizures very often, and also in people who did not have them very often. However, the risk is thought to be higher the more seizures you have. The risk of SUDEP, if you are seizure-free, is very, very low, and the SUDEP is rare in people with newly diagnosed epilepsy. Any of the following things are thought to increase a person's risk of SUDEP: having uncontrolled generalized tonic-clonic seizures, not taking epilepsy medicines, having seizures that are not controlled by epilepsy medicines, having sudden and frequent changes to your epilepsy medicines, being a young adult, in particular male, having sleep seizures, having seizures when you're alone, and unsurprisingly, drinking large amounts of alcohol, something Ben tended to do when he was younger, as he mentioned.
First off, it's like, okay, all right, okay, what's SUD? And it's, okay, well, it's basically, as I sort of said earlier, like, okay, it's, I mean, okay, human beings live and die. It's sort of the fact of life. The SUD specifically to epilepsy is like, okay, if you are walking up the stairs or something, or you are in a particular position and you have a seizure and fall over and break your neck, that's sudden and unexpected, and you probably will die. You won't die immediately, but having a seizure may then be a factor in the why you died in the first place. So, you know, if you fall off a ledge or something because you've lost your footing, because you were having a seizure, because you lost your balance. Because you can't walk in a straight line once you're having like myoclonic seizures, you're twitching and you need to lie down. Things to note about epilepsy itself is that it looks a lot worse than it actually is. If someone's having a seizure and they're ending up on the ground, you should put them into the recovery position, which is them lying on their left-hand side with their right arm. If it's onto their left-hand side, then you fold their right arm over them and you bring their right knee up towards their chest so they will stay on that side. You want to make sure that their airway is unobstructed, because what can happen during an epileptic fit, you can throw up. or you can regurgitate something, or you can, you know, you, in my case, I actually have almost forgotten it. Thanks for bringing this back up. I remember, no, it wasn't intended as a pun. The first time it happened, and the one you were referring to, the first time it happened in university, like the first thing I did was I pushed past the resident doctor in the hostel and immediately barfed up my guts into the sink. So in my case, it was accompanied by vomiting violently. You'd wake up with a raging headache, you'd vomit violently, and you'd feel dazed and confused. And maybe to most first-year students, like, what, this is just a regular Saturday morning or Sunday morning or any day of the week. But you'd vomit violently, and in my case, I also, the other kind of, you know, misnomer about epilepsy is people swallow their tongues, which, if you know anything about human physiology, is almost impossible, because there's a little bit of flesh that attaches your tongue to the base of your mouth, which precisely stops your tongue from going back down your throat. There's this idea that you have to put a depressor, or you know, have to put something in their mouth to stop them from swallowing their tongue, which is the last thing you should do, because what actually happens in my case is that my teeth clamp down, which is very, like, you know, some people said, oh, you need to put a spoon in his mouth, like, you people are insane, don't ever do that to anyone with epilepsy, because you'll either break their teeth, or, you know, you'll break the spoon, or you'll lose a finger trying to do this. In my case, I clamped down on the side of my tongue a little bit. I wouldn't cut a huge chunk off, but I would, like, certainly scrape it pretty bad, and it would leave, you know, the equivalent of an open wound, which would just become an ulcer on my tongue, which is fun. I might say, like, if you love mouth ulcers, wait until you get one on the side of your tongue, and you cannot eat, and you feel terrible as well.
So as Ben mentioned there, it's very important that you take care when somebody has a tonic-clonic seizure. According to epilepsy.org.uk, the best way of dealing with these seizures is to use the ACTION acronym. So you assess the situation. Are they in any danger of injuring themselves? Remove any nearby objects that could cause injury. Cushion, C. Cushion their head with a jumper, for example, to protect them from head injury. Time. Check the time. If the seizure lasts longer than 5 minutes, you should call an ambulance. I. Identify. Look for a medical bracelet or ID card. It may give you information about the person's seizures and what to do. O. Over. Once the seizure is over, put them on their side in the recovery position. Stay with them and reassure them as they come round. N. Never. And this is important. Never restrain the person, as Ben said, or put anything in their mouth, or try to give them food or drink. You should call an ambulance if you know it's a person's first seizure, the seizure lasts more than 5 minutes, or one seizure appears to follow another without the person gaining consciousness in between, the person is injured, or you believe the person needs urgent medical attention. This is all available on epilepsy.org.uk. That's Epilepsy Action's website. If you have any further questions, you can speak to an advisor on free phone 0808 800 5050.
In terms of changing my life, I don't know, just like, you know, getting more sleep. I'm less yahooing around. I don't drink nearly as much as I never used to. But in some regards, I don't actually view it as a negative because I think my own personality, like if I did not have this in my life, I think I probably could very much have been a very, very heavy drinker in university. Like I would, you know, gladly get absolutely ripped as often as possible. But instead, this, as if it was, I don't know, karma or something, who knows. But instead, I got this this condition, and you just live with it. It's not, you know, it's you deal with it. I mean, I'm not going to lie and say that it was, you know, pleasant news. It did depress me initially. Because, you know, I thought, oh, okay, great, my life's over. I can't drive, I can't drink, I can't, you know, this. And when you're in university, it's actually quite, it can be crippling, because university is about drinking, about socializing, and that's, you know, that's the medium by which people socialize. But as you get older, you realize there's plenty of other ways to meet people and all sorts of other things. And, it, you know, drinking is a social lubricant, but it's not the only one. So, in general, I kind of don't, I mean, to sum things up, like, it does affect a lot of people, but maybe, I don't know, it affects a lot of people to different degrees of severity. Like, I would consider myself relatively lucky. My aunt is a pediatrician, and, you know, she's sort of told me kind of horror stories of, like, oh, yeah, I know about the drug you're taking. Like, well, yeah, it's great. We're giving it to some kids here who are having seizures 4 times a day. Like, these people who are barely able to get out of bed or are almost nearly unconscious. A person I used to know, she was in a relationship with a man who was having, like, seizures 3 times a day. But it became, like, he obviously, like, when she was talking about it, she said, oh, it was just, you know, it was part of life in the office. You know, like, he's just gone into the office to, he's going to lie down for a moment. He's having his thing. It affects people in different ways. And, I mean, it's, you can classify it as a disability. I've never really seen it as such. I mean, it limits me in doing certain things, but given the type of it is, it's not photosensitive epilepsy, so I don't really have much problems, you know, working with computers or nothing like that. But some people might. The important thing to note is that it's possible that quite a lot of people don't actually know that they might be susceptible to this kind of thing. So if you ever have any kind of instances such as, you know, if you drink too much and you have the DTs the next morning, that might not actually be the delirium tremens. You might have something that can be treated. The downside is when you start taking drugs like these, at least in my case, is that what bums me out actually is that I can't give blood anymore. Up until that point, I was given like three things of blood once, and then when they said, like, oh, you're taking drugs, like, you can't give blood anymore, because basically I'd be giving people blood with containing, you know, this medicine that could actually put the person into a coma, which is not the kind of blood you want to give to people. So as much as I'd like, I don't know, it could be maybe in several years' time, I might be able to just stop using the medication altogether, because there have been a lot of other people. Julius Caesar supposedly had epilepsy. Dostoevsky, I mentioned, had epilepsy, and some other people had it as well. And they seem to get on just fine. And some people actually grew out of it.
So hopefully that will give you a better idea of how to help somebody who has epilepsy. I'd like to thank Ben for being here and for talking to us about a very sensitive subject. If you have any questions that you have about epilepsy, I've been using epilepsy.org.uk for this information. Thank you very much to them for all their help. And the Epilepsy Action Hotline, once again, is 0808 800 5050. Thank you, and stay safe.